February 4, 1981, Long Beach, California. Hubert McLean, interviewed by Ken Naverson and Kay Brigo.
Okay, just tell us where you were born.
All right, my name is...
You can relax.
Hubert McLean.
Yeah.
Hubert A. And...
What's the A for?
Anthony.
Okay.
And I was born on 6 March, 1909, in the state of Kansas. And I grew up in Kansas City, Missouri, and attended the University of, Kansas State College at Manhattan, which was an agricultural college, and then the graduate work at the University of Kansas at Lawrence.
What did your father do?
My father was a farmer, a thresherman, and an inventor, and a builder of heavy truck equipment, dump trucks and things of that kind.
Did he have his own farm?
Yes, we had our own farm in a little tiny town called Protection, Kansas. Its name Protection came from a sort of a fort that was built by the farmers in the early days to protect them from an Indian attack. The Indian attack never occurred, but they were always ready. And they had a place of rendezvous where there was water and firewood, and they could hold out against the Indian attack if it ever came.
Had your father and mother gone to college?
No. My father was a self-educated man, and he did a lot of... In his early years, he was a contractor, builder of roundhouses for the railroads. A roundhouse was a circular building in which they repaired or maintained locomotives. And he built several of those throughout the Middle West. And later he became a thresherman and a farmer.
Did you have brothers and sisters?
I have a sister. We were born in 1912 and lives in Northern California.
Did she go to college too?
Yes, she went to university in Kansas.
Okay, you went to Manhattan.
Manhattan.
And what did you study?
Agricultural chemistry. And then later did graduate work in chemistry and biology.
What years? Pardon me, what years were that?
I'm not clear about mine now. I got out of the university in 1930, mm-hmm. And right in the bottom of the Depression. There was no opportunity for any kind of work in chemistry. All the chemical jobs were closed, and the people who were teaching in the universities taught until they were 70 or beyond before they ever either died in the office or were finally pensioned off at 70 or 75, so there was no opportunity even in the teaching profession at that time. So I worked for a while for Wilson and Company in Kansas City as a research chemist, and the project that I was working on was tender-made hams. But that was suspended in the bottom of the Depression, and so having had photography as a hobby, a good part of my life, I started selling photographs to the World Reviewers of the newspapers. Now, a World Reviewer was a brown sheet of paper, or section of the paper, that carried excellent reproductions of photographs. Most of them were of a pictorial nature, or a pretty picture, or motion picture stars, or entertainment of some kind or another for people on Sunday when they got their newspaper. After they finished the Sunday, they usually went to the court down section.
When did you take your first picture?
Oh, I haven't any idea. Probably in 1917, 1918.
Hmm. With an inexpensive camera?
No, it wasn't an inexpensive camera. Well, it would be by today's standards. It was a 122 Seneca postcard camera that my father owned. And I made pictures of our wheat crops, the fields of wheat, and the harvesting and threshing of the things like that I did as a youngster, a teenager. So I just kept on playing with photography from then on.
And but it was after Wilson let you out that you started selling pictures
yes,
for the first time?
Mm-hmm.
And did you ever study photography with anyone, or did you just sort of teach yourself?
Yeah, I taught myself. Many, many years later, in the 50s, 1950s here, I attended Art Center School just to have something to do in the evening, keep me out of mischief. And I took several courses in color printing and color photography and things like that at the Art Center School here in Los Angeles. And it was merely to keep my sanity, because I was, at the time, was doing a lot of society photographs of overstuffed ladies and big flowered hats with teacups.
That was for the Times?
That was for the Times. Mm-hmm. And after you have about six of those assignments a day, you either go bananas or go out and get drunk.
Well, let's get back to when you first started selling.
Well, I would... I work much as a year in advance. If, for example, if it was harvest time and they were making sorghum, I would make a whole layout of pictures about sorghum making. But with rural reviewers who work from 4 to 6 weeks in advance, it would be much too late for them. So I would keep the pictures and print them up and caption them and all, and then send them out the following August to the railroad review editors, and anticipating future events. So Thanksgiving, I always had a boy sharpening an axe with a turkey gobbler strutting by, or some similar thing. And of course, Easter time was bunnies and kitties, and coloring Easter eggs, and making jack-o'-lanterns. I worked almost a year in advance, and I did that for several years until we came to the Star and said, hey, we're paying you more of a week for feature pictures than if you went to work for us. So I went to work for them. And while it was, this was in the early days of 35 millimeter photography, and I went to rehearsal of the Kansas City Philharmonic, which was the Kansas City Star sponsored activity. And I made candid pictures of the orchestra in rehearsal without their tails and white tie, but in their shirt sleeves. And they weren't wearing at that time t-shirts. But nevertheless, I made a series of pictures which ran in Rotor Reviewer about the Philharmonic in its unguarded moments when it was in rehearsal. And it so impressed one of the members of the orchestra, who played string bass in the orchestra. His name was Kenneth Winstead, and so he approached me to see what kind of camera I had been using and all about it, after the pictures ran, and he was very excited about it. And then the next fall, they came back. He called me from Long Beach, he and his uncle, and asked me to come out and manage their store in Long Beach. It was known as Winstead Brothers, and it was a 244 Pine. As far as I know, Kenneth Winstead is still alive, and the last I heard of him, he had gone to Spain. He'd married a Spanish woman here in Los Angeles and had gone to Spain to live. And that was before the Franco Revolution, so I have no knowledge of where he might be today.
Had you ever been to California before?
No. I packed my wife and two kids and came to California and settled down here in Long Beach. I've been here ever since.
Well, I missed the year. What was that?
1937. Came to California, came to Long Beach, 1937.
And they were already established in business.
I wish that they had been established since 1919. The Winstead Brothers had a studio and photo store in Hutchinson, Kansas. And they had also, during World War One, had established portrait studios in two or three of the training camps, Fort Riley, Fort Funston, and one other I don't remember the name of. But they had done a great deal of business with the young soldiers and portraits of young soldiers in World War One.
Do you know why they happened to come out here to relocate?
They came to Long Beach in 1919 after the war was over and the military camps were closed and that business had all collapsed or dried up. And so they wanted to venture out, and California was a place to adventure too, so they came here in about 1919 and established a photo finishing plant and a portrait studio and a camera store. And there were several locations in Long Beach prior to the 244 Pine address of them. And then there was also related to them were the Adamsons. They had been studio operators for them, as well as a man named A.P. McInturf, who was a portraitist. Very, very capable portrait man. High class portraits. And the Adamson boys, Curtis and Otis Adamson, ran the finishing plant during Kodak finishing. Then
that was the plant that was up on Anaheim?
No, right. That wasn't Anaheim. The plant was at 244 Pine.
Oh, it was. Same.
And there were earlier plants in, beside downtown Long Beach, but it was finally concentrated at 244 Pine. Then fact of the matter is they had two different names, the Adamsons for the finishing and the Winstead for the finishing. It was all done in the same dark rooms. But if a customer got unhappy with Adamson's photo finishing, why, then Winstead would call on the customer and solicit his business and get the business. And if someone got unhappy with Winstead's photo finishing, then the Adamson boys would call on him and solicit their business, so that they kept the business pretty well tied up in Long Beach.
It was all the same printers,
the same bathroom, same printers, and all doing the work.
Was this during the time that people took their photographs to like drugstores and Winstead came and got them from the
drugstores? Yeah, that's right. Yeah. They had drugstores and novelty shops down the pike. The pike used to be a very viable place for tourists, and they had lots of business on there. Cecil May, who started May's Camera Shop, was down the pike as a portraitist or a fast photo finisher. There were quite a number of people involved with photography on the pike.
Okay, I need to have you explain to me again the relationship between the man that you met in the symphony orchestra in Kansas City and the Winstead brothers.
All right. Kenneth Winstead was a man who was playing the string bass in the Kansas City Philharmonic, and he is the son of Tom Winstead.
Right.
Tom Winstead was the main technician and businessman of the Winstead brothers. There was also George Winstead, who was he was a very outgoing chap and quite a social mixer, and went out and solicited business and joined the Rotary, and there's one tale where he actually ran for dog catcher in Long Beach. I don't know whether he won or lost in the dog catcher deal, but he got involved with the politics of Long Beach, and although he's never a councilman, he was appointed to the Water Commission, and as such was instrumental in getting Long Beach into the Metropolitan Water District. You know, and the Metropolitan Water District had quite a slush fund, and they would periodically take the water commissioners and city officials, quote, over to the Colorado River to see how the dams were getting along. They were building the big dams on the Colorado River, the Hoover Dam and the several of the dams. I don't remember which, how many there were. There were several dams involved in selling the Colorado River water to the West Coast. And he was a very big man in that. Later on, one of the brothers died. Tom Winstead died, and then the family feud broke out between the heirs and George, and it finally came to a showdown. And Tom's heirs bought George Winstead's interest in the photo finishing business and the camera store, and then later gave him back the photo finishing business. And about 1936, I think this occurred, and then George went out on Anaheim and established a photo finishing plant and continued with the drugstore finishing, and that is what's known today, 1981, as City Photo. It was established by George Winstead to carry on the...
But it's been sold.
It's been sold, yeah. It's no longer in Winstead hands.
I have a lot of my interest, of course, in Winstead are a lot of these photographs, and which I brought several of, as you can see.
Mm-hmm.
I was wondering if you could tell something about the way some of them were made, and as you can see, this is a contact print from an 8x10 negative.
Are we assuming that these were photographed by George, or...?
It is unclear. Now, I came here after George had left the Winstead Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
And I replaced a man named who was manager of the store of now they'll come to me in a moment. But there was George Winstead did a lot of the photography. He had a man named Brown who also worked with him, and a man named Ward, Billy Ward. And they all three were active in the commercial photo part of the business, so I honestly cannot tell you which is which.
Mm-hmm. Well,
Earl McCutcheon was the name of the man who I replaced. Later, Earl McCutcheon established a camera business here called Camera Supply.
Maybe even just some speculation. The picture here that we're looking at is Winstead is labeled Winstead 6303, and it's a picture of a newsstand. Date on some of the magazines is October, November 1929. Now this, to me, doesn't look like a commercial photograph. I'm wondering if you would speculate as to why it was taken, or there seem to be a lot of photographs like this in the various negatives that the Historical Society and the library and so forth have, and it doesn't seem like that it would be a picture that a commercial photographer would make in order to make money.
It was probably made for the owner of this particular newsstand.
You think so?
Mm-hmm.
What would the newsstand owner do with it?
Send it to his parents in New York or someplace like that?
wouldn't he be standing there? I don't know. But what I'm getting at, and maybe we're going out of the range of what we're supposed to be talking about here, is that there seem to be a lot of photographs here that were taken simply for the purpose of taking the photographs.
For record purposes?
Yeah, it seems like there was some sort of a personal project going on.
As I said, George was very active in civic affairs, and as such, being close to City Hall and so on, he would no doubt have requests for pictures like this.
Mm-hmm.
We're looking here at a picture of Pine Avenue looking north and trying to identify where it is. Looks like the security bank building over on the right.
Well, there are a lot of pictures. This one is Ray Carbon is delivering the Breakers Hotel Orchestra to F.B. Dunn, which is, you know, an obvious commercial sort of.
Well, you get an awful lot of this promotional photography. When the Breakers and the I think there's an enormous file, if you come across it, on the opening of the City Coast Club.
Haven't gone on to that material.
The Silver Slipper and all of that. The Pacific Coast Club is a private club, mostly an athletic and social club here in Long Beach.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, these were all made of 8 to 10 cameras.
While we're on that, do you happen to know what kind of camera it was specifically?
Yeah, it was an Eastman 2D. 2D. I'm just going to have to tell you all about this.
Hi there.
That's all right. You've had your say now.
Well, you have a guest on the lens. The lens on that was used to take that newsstand photograph is absolutely amazing. I've done 20x blow-ups of small sections of that negative, and
it was a Gunlock 10mm mic, triple convertible, a symmetrical lens. This lens is made by the Gunlock Optical Company in Rochester, and people either praised it or damned it.
You knew that he used that?
Yes.
Or was it just that everyone did it?
I knew that he used it, because I've seen the lens. This was one of those things that was a matter of craftsmanship on the people who put it together. And as I said, it was either very, very good or very, very bad. Didn't seem to be any in between, and if you found a good one, you held on to it for dear life, and if you had a bad one, you sold it off as quick as you could. But this was two elements, had three different focal lengths, so you could get from medium wide angle, and then they had also Bachelam Protar F9 wide angles.
About
7-inch focal length.
7-inch.
180mm.
In 35mm terms, that would be equivalent to.
24.
He seems to have some very, on some of these shots, some very wide angle. I'm looking through these pictures. I've also found this one.
Euclid 10?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That, do you know anything about that?
No, I don't. I've heard the kind of activity here, but I don't know anything about the photograph.
That one is not labeled Winstead, but it was discovered in a pile of other Winstead negatives, so the assumption is that it was a Winstead. What I'm looking
at... 222. This is probably made with flash powder.
And this appears to be a double exposure.
It could be if the camera was moved during the exposure. It would seem as if it is. Because it would be totally dark there until the flash went off. And that flash would probably last for a fifth of a second at least, maybe a half, depending on the amount of flash powder you used.
This picture here is the front of the Lord and Taylor Cafe.
Yeah, it was on Pacific Avenue.
And in the mirror in the front here, you can see a photographer and a camera.
Mm-hmm.
And does that look like George or one of the others?
One of the others, I think.
Mm-hmm.
George is more given to large cowboy type hats.
Ah. This is a fedora.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a creased top fedora.
Hmm. Well, that's interesting. What all of this stuff, nitrate materials, or at least most of it in those days, the 8x10 stuff, and how how would they have printed these? Let's say, would there be a common style? What we have here is just an 8x10 glossy contact from the original with black borders. How would they have differed from that?
Well, they had two types of printers. They had a large flat platen printer that would take an 8x10, and it had
that's a contact printer?
Contact printer. And it had a mask in it made of red celluloid that would mask in to the edge of the negative image. And then the mirror makes it place the contact paper on top of the negative and expose it with four lamps in the contact printer.
Mm-hmm. So they would use a paper maybe like Azo or something
Azo or Velox. These seem to be, well, of course, I can't tell, but these prints are not the missiles.
No, they're absolutely not.
Probably Azo. If you have any of the original prints, the Azo paper is always kind of greenish. And the Velox, it will say Velox on the back of it in small letters, it's indistinct. And it'll be a blue gray. Gray, with pure gray or blue gray.
Now, I know this is really difficult and subjective, but would you say that, and I would say probably none of these prints are, well, some of them are pretty decent anyway, would you say they would have printed them this way, or would they have been softer or harsher?
No, they would have been plain contact, an extra contact. They did not have an 8x10 or larger. And,
but the question I'm asking is in
oh, it means in contrast
of
it would be printed like you have it here, because this was the criteria of a brilliant, clean, sharp picture. What commercial people worked for. They worked toward that.
Were most of these things done, say, on glossy paper?
Yes.
They were ferrotyped.
Yeah. The people who ran the portrait business, they printed on soft focus and matte paper or heavily textured paper.
The earliest of these, I don't know the earliest date of any of these particular pictures we're looking at here, but I know I've seen Winsteads that date from probably about the earliest, I would say it's probably about 1920. Though there may be earlier ones.
See, they came here in 1919 and they got themselves established in the photo finishing business first. And then went into studio and then into commercial work. So it probably, I think the Coast Club opened in 1922. And I was not here, but I've talked to many of the people there, and they made a very great effort in producing commercial pictures, news type pictures of the opening of the Pacific Coast Club 1922. So by that time they were in the commercial photography business.
Is this okay?
Yeah. Let me go. I'm going to turn your tape off so I get it.
That's on it this way.
We're looking at the Lord and Taylor photograph. Lord and Taylor was restaurant and bar after liquor returned.
Before that, it was an ice cream parlor.
And it was quite the thing. It was quite expensive.
You remember that parrot?
Yes.
What was?
That was just a sidewalk stopper. People stop and feed the parrot. The parrot most made a lot of racket, and it became quite the thing, the place to have dinner in the evening. A top sirloin steak was 95 cents with four courses.
Who were the other photographers in town? Did you know the
Inman? Well, Larry Inman came here quite a bit later. I'm not precisely sure just when he came, but I knew Larry. Larry had sometimes young people working for him, young photographers, but he was for the most part a single man operation, and he did excellent photography. He came here quite a bit later than the Winstead, yeah, however. And there, and he built a beautiful building up there on Long Beach Boulevard for his business. I think it's Ace Blueprints in there now. But he had a 12-foot-high door so they could back trucks in and cars and do all sorts of stage and studio photography there.
But this relates in a way to the question I was asking earlier, because much of the Inman material that I've seen anyway, and I understand that we're probably at the Historical Society, at the library, looking at a material that's gone through a certain process of selection. In other words, we're not seeing everything they did. But most of the material from Inman seems much more commercial, much more obviously commercial than the Winstead material. Getting back, as an example, on this Lord and Taylor picture that we're talking about, with a photographer in the mirror. Now, I know if I were taking this picture, if I had been hired to go and take a picture of somebody's restaurant, the front of it, I would do my damnedest to stay out of that mirror, because I might, after I got done with the assignment, say, hey, that's kind of neat, and position myself so that I get myself in the picture. But I don't think I would turn this into a client.
Well, I have an idea at the cost of 8 to 10 film, even in that time. The man didn't notice himself in the mirror.
Really? I don't see how he couldn't. That tripod leg is absolutely in the center of that composition, and you can see it's really carefully composed. So, one of the things I'm really wondering about is I hope I'm not pushing this too far, but it seems to me that there's some sort of an aesthetic working in a lot of these photographs. I was just wondering if you share that view, or if you think they could all be explained as commercial efforts.
I think this Lord and Taylor picture was a record for the Lord and Taylor people.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, see, when Long Beach in the 1920s, 1930s had very little businesses other than Procter & Gamble.
Mm-hmm.
And see, the Oilfields hadn't come in until 1925. So that there was nothing much to photograph in the commercial line as we think of it today, because of the smallness of the town and the lack of businesses, because the harbor hadn't developed and... it was just merely a tourist town and a business town for the people in the South Los Angeles County.
Yeah, I have a friend who collects, and he goes to postcard shows, and he collects postcards of Long Beach that do not include the beachfront. So,
yeah.
What about the other people who were photographers in those days? And did you know Doherty, or was he already gone?
He was
gone.
I did not know Doherty, and Earl had his son, the aviator, had already been killed before I came to Long Beach. So I don't know anything about the Doherty activity. I knew that he had a place on the pike, but on the pier. Of course, it was quite something. People came down and walked around the pier on Sunday afternoon, and he could con them into coming in for a picture of him in their promenade clothes. Why, that was much more to his advantage.
How about Shirley Bacon?
I don't know. I don't know the name.
A note here. I saw a picture, I think it's in one of the Historical Society journals, and the inscription on the bottom is photo by Doherty, print by Bacon.
Yeah.
So there must have been some sort of photographer-printer relationship there.
And there must have also been a relationship between the Winstead and Doherty, because the first city directory that I found, I can't remember if it's George or Thomas Winstead, but I think it's George. He's living in the Earl apartments, which were owned by Charles Doherty. Is that it?
A lot of these, not all of them, but many of them, has Winstead done here in India ink on the negative, which comes out white in the print, and then a number under it.
This one's a picture of the Broadland apartment, or what's now the Broadland, Broadland Hotel on Broadway and Broadway and Linden, obviously, and it says 5785 at the bottom. This is common, pretty common to inscribe your name so obviously on a picture.
Yes, that was quite the...
That was the way it was done.
That was the way it was identified, the way it was done. It showed where they, and even to the serial number, so that they could later order them by serial number. They were filed by serial number. There was also day books that were kept showing each assignment or each commercial job, and they were destroyed, I think, when Winstead Brothers was sold.
Yeah, that's what I heard, too. The key was lost. Here's one of Catalina, mm-hmm. I might want to think.
Before you get off of talking about inscribing the negative, I found two there that look like they were inscribed perhaps by a different hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some of them are machine done. These two are obviously, this is a obviously a different sort of printing technique style than this.
Mm-hmm.
When I said I was pointing to the one, and I meant that one was definitely done with India ink or something like that, with a pen. But some of the, and I think they're later, were done by some sort of machine process. I don't know whether I have one right on hand. A lot of pictures of here's one, but I think this is an Inman, in fact, and it's a different, completely different sort of number.
Yeah.
You've probably seen all these. Have you watched
them? No, I haven't seen them all. Inmans. I remember the great volume of film boxes upstairs with the negatives in them, but I was more concerned with those things.
Could we get you to tell what happened to the stuff when they finally, George, I guess, finally passed in the city? What happened when you set up city photo now?
Oh, well, George established that business and did the photo finishing for quite until post-war, too. He sold the business then to Leonard McCarthen. And then he opened... George had a daughter named Wilma. And there was two survivors of the Winstead brothers. Kenneth Winstead, the musician, and Wilma was George's daughter. And he, up on Long Beach Boulevard, about 2800 block, he established a small canvas store there after World War II. And she ran this store for 2 or 3 years. And then she closed it out. She married the second time and closed out the business, so I do not know what had become of Wilma or the store.
Or how the negatives came to be.
Oh, the negatives were retained at Winstead Brothers' store, and they were hundreds and hundreds of them, great racks of them, all in 8x10 film boxes. That's what the film originally came from Eastman in. And they were indexed with a journal, and it showed serial numbers and so on. After the war, the Winstead Brothers store was sold, and they inherited all the negatives, and they moved them to a new location in the 300 block on Pine and maintained them for a while, but the day books, I understand, were laying at the bottom of an elevator shaft. Someone had dumped them or dropped them down the elevator, and there they, no one knows what became of them after that.
Some of them are this historical society.
No, those are Inman's day books.
I understand that the Vince said their books are...
No, I'm talking about the negatives. Oh. The ones that were dumped from the bottom of the elevator.
Well, I don't know as to the... I never did know what became of the negatives until he showed up at the Historical Society and at the Public Library. Mm-hmm. Some went to both places. So I do not know. But there's no knowledge of the day books, so day-to-day running of the commercial business, who they were made for, if we could find those day books, why they would give you an index as to what, who the pictures were made for and what purpose, you know, the dates when they were made.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because we have in the day books, and from that you get a good idea of the few pictures that he made, you know, his wife's mother or something or other, or their trip to the mountains, or, you know, but there are very few of those, and most of them that are in those books, you can see who they made them for. And
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Although they made tons of aerials, apparently on speculation.
Yes.
A lot of photographs in that Inman collection are labeled, it'll say assignment or... and it'll just say for stock.
Yeah.
St. Mary's Hospital for stock. You know, which would make sense if you're hiring, if you've mm-hmm. got a couple guys working for you, you don't want them to sit around the shop, so you go take a picture of St. Mary's.
Mm-hmm.
Good cloudy day or good mm-hmm. sunny day or whatever.
I have no personal knowledge of the commercial business of the Winstead business at all. I remember Mr. Brown, and when I came here, Mr. Ward had already opened, Ward and Weir had opened camera stores in Long Beach, and so they were not even in the finishing business themselves.
What would, this is kind of a professional question, but what if I were the owner of this Lord and Taylor Cafe and I call up Winston and say, I want you to come over and take a picture, or the newsstand, I want a picture of it, and... how much you're going to charge? What would he tell me?
I don't really know, but I would guess from previous experience that I've had in the business that it would probably charge $5 to come and make a picture. And if flash was involved, well, then it'd be more.
Mm-hmm.
And then prints were usually 50 cents each.
Mm-hmm.
8 to 10 contacts for 50 cents each.
I wonder how that would translate inflation-wise, because if somebody, if certain high-priced photographers I know were called to come and take a picture like that with an 8, well, let's not even say with an 8 by 10, let's say with a 2 1/4, they might well charge $100 or a couple $100.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Very well. I remember immediately post-war, $25 was minimum charge for going out and making a picture
mm-hmm.
of somebody in their office or some such activity as that. Mm-hmm. And that might entail 4 or 5 exposures with mm-hmm. a small camera.
Right. With the 8 by 10, generally, from what I'm told anyway, you didn't mess around. You went out and took one picture generally.
Yeah, that's right. You went out, set up your camera, composed it, checked with your client, let him look at the ground glass too. Of course, you had to explain to him it was upside down. You had to get him out of the head cloth and mess up his hair. And then after everything was agreed on, that it was the picture they wanted, then you made the exposure.
Do you think, Lee down at, side note here, down at Terry's Camera said that he thought there might be a market these days for birdies on a stick. And he was going to. Do you think Winstead ever used birdies on a stick?
I never knew of anything like that. They used pan puppets with children.
Right.
I think this is what a puppet is a little figure on your hand. Now, there's marionettes and there's puppets, but I think a pan puppet was used with children quite a lot to elicit... an expression of some kind in portraiture.
Yeah.
I don't, pardon me if I'm getting too technical here, but that's sort of what I want to know, so I'm going to do it anyway. This picture,
Okay, the film here is, it says right here, Kodak, well, it just says Eastman Kodak, but it, and from the date, I assume it's a nitrate. It's almost got to be a nitrate-based material. And at that time, they had, as I understand, there was some...
acetate?
No, not acetate. I'm sorry. It's so common now that I can't even remember what it's called. No, there's orthofilm and then there's panchromatic, right? It's just so absolutely commonplace now that the name...